You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
Did you own the MC Hammer parachute pants when you were a young man?
If you don't believe me, I don't really care. I don't need a picture for it. I like the memory.
Giles Barnes has parachute pants, though. I think they're just catching on in Europe. It's a Euro thing.
So that's like reverse buyer's remorse.
Yeah,
that's,
I mean,
this is 11th, cheated 11th dimension chess right here.
Yeah,
maybe.
Cheated
I'm
a little bit, yep.
That's good radio right there, guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on SiriusXM FC, channel 85 at MLSsoccer.com. I am Andrew Wiebe, as always. With me, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle, and no Dave Goss. That means we have a certain research bear in the building, Ben, the research bear, here with us. Guys, how's it going? Everything good?
No complaints. I mean, it was kind of a up and down weekend, right? Either the games were crazy, 4-3 Red Bulls win, or kind of a dire scoreless draw. So it was tough to keep on the emotional even keel.
Oh, so we're skipping right past. I mean, I just, you know, I asked a simple question. I thought maybe you'd have a simple answer. There's a certain Huskies team, a UConn team, that there was some trash talk. I resisted. I went to the Red Bulls game on Saturday. I didn't even need to watch the game, a 16-0 run in the first half.
The game was on Friday night.
Whatever it was. No, it wasn't. It was on Saturday night.
I don't know.
Good try. You weren't paying attention this weekend. That's what we pay for from the research bear here. Details. It's all about details. I had to gloat a little bit. KU moving on. So on to the Sweet 16, a sweet weekend for me.
Whatever happened to that sweet Midwestern boy with the good manners? The city has corrupted you, Weeby.
Aw, shucks. You know what? I see somebody down, and I'm just going in for the kill. But it was an interesting weekend in MLS, and we are going to talk all about it. Of course, Dave is in Dallas for the GA Cup. So tune in to those streams. He's calling all of them. That's good stuff. You probably know Tim Howard is official. He is headed to the Colorado Rapids in the summer. Some interesting stuff from him on the halftime show on Sunday, D.C. and Colorado. We'll talk a little bit about that in just a little bit. And, of course, the U.S. national team, the U23 team for the U.S., and the Canadian men's national team are gearing up for World Cup qualifiers as well as a two-leg series against Colombia for a place in the Olympics. We have Andy Herzog, the head coach of the U23s, here in the second segment. I talked to him for a little bit. We'll get the stakes there for that team. But first, MLS, guys. Free kicks galore. It was a wild weekend for those. Kyle Larin scoring again. The Red Bulls finally got on the board with a win. It was a crazy one. I was there. FC Dallas, after getting shellacked, they handle Montreal. I mean, it's hard to predict here, and Seattle's still pointless. So I'm going to start us on Sunday, and I'm going to start us with the late game, and that would be Sporting Kansas City and Toronto FC. Sporting KC with a 1-0 win. Brad Davis with his first goal for the club. It is the winner. Roger with the red card. No, I'm not going to call a red card Roger, but Roger Espinoza with one in this. But the real question here, and what everyone is talking about, Doyle, is whether this goal should have stood. Brad Davis with what appears to be a foul on Justin Morrow in the box. He gets free after that and scores a goal. So I put it to you, Toronto FC fans aren't happy. Our friend Kurt Larson on Twitter is talking about instant replay for this play. What do you make of this?
I don't think this is a type of play that you use instant replay for. I think bad calls are just part of the game, and in this case, it was a bad call. But it was a tough call. I mean, those guys are moving pretty quick, and they're, you know, 40 yards away, and it's tough. I think it's actually a better call, a better cause to advocate for assistant refs by the goal. And as we've seen in a couple of international tournaments over the last half decade or so, just getting two more refs on the field, guys who can keep an eye on stuff in and around the box, maybe that helps in this situation. It shouldn't have counted, but it happens. That's the game.
Certainly a foul on replay. I do think live that it was a little bit more ambiguous than some people are saying. It wasn't cut and dry live, and the fact of the matter is Josh Williams had two opportunities to snuff this one out. In fact, Justin Morrow had an opportunity to snuff this one out. He's got to be better in emergency defending, but it doesn't happen. Brad Davis cuts inside. It's basically 5v1, red versus blue.
Toronto didn't really close him out at all after he pushed off of Morrow, or he stepped on his foot or whatever happened there. But there's three Toronto defenders right there, and they don't close him out in space. You know he's going to his left foot. He's Brad Davis. We've been watching this for 12 years. You have to close down his left foot. You can't let him get to that spot in the box.
Yep, Josh Williams with a little bit of a jump, which was kind of strange. But Sporting KC just keep rolling. 3 wins out of 3 for them. It hasn't been pretty, but they've only allowed 1 goal. They're at the top of the standings. Big for them. Toronto FC still happy about this start. Who should be happier, though, Doyle? Sporting KC or Toronto? They're two different scenarios. Of course, Toronto on this long road trip. Sporting Kansas City has had some home games. They've had some opportunities here.
Yeah.
I almost think that Toronto should be happiest. Look, they're in great position.
I think I agree with you, because for Toronto, what held them back last year was their defense. They were just a disastrous defensive team in 2015, and they've actually looked, I think, pretty good so far through 3 games defensively. And if you could do that and add to Jovinko and Josie coming back, and, you know, they have another bullet in the chamber, so to speak, for signing another frontline guy, I think Toronto FC fans should be very, very satisfied through 3 weeks.
And no Drew Moore in this game. You figure if Drew Moore is there for Josh Williams, and I like Josh Williams as a defender in this league. I don't think as a starter for a playoff team, but he's certainly a good piece to have. I think Drew Moore probably handles that situation, or at least communicates to Justin Morrow and says, hey, man, clear that thing. Don't try to shield there. Don't try to stand over it. But as it stands, a 1-0 win for Sporting Kansas City, a big one for them. My brother at this game, he said the place was going wild. You could kind of hear it, the peanut gallery. On Fox Sports One
was very interesting.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. They basically labeled Michael Bradley the unofficial referee for this game. Didn't matter. Didn't get the call that they needed. They lose this one. The game before that, DC and Colorado, a 1-1 draw here. Tim Howard on at halftime. Zach McMathis talked about all the time he spent with them. Of course, spent 3 straight years at Everton in the offseason training with Howard. He lived with Howard at that time. Those two guys are close. Now Tim Howard is coming into the Rapids, and there's absolutely no doubt that he's going to be the starter. Circumstances have not been kind to Zach McMath when it comes to DP signings, when it comes to holding on to his starting position. But Doyle, he didn't do himself a favor in this one. They were up 1-0, and he really should have kept that goal out.
Yeah, I mean, circumstances would have been kinder to him if he was better at commanding his box. And that's been the label for him since day one. I thought, in his last year as a starter in Philly, I thought he had improved quite a bit. Not enough to keep the job, but we saw a bit of the old Zach McMath yesterday in that game. And look, I'm a big proponent of keepers punching the ball away. And it's a skill that I think has sort of disappeared a little bit over the years. In that situation, if you have the slightest inkling of doubt, just punch it as far as you can upfield. It's the old Kevin Hartman technique. You're not going to be the world's greatest keeper if you do that, but you're going to give up fewer goals, and that's the name of the game.
Yeah, you live for another day. What did you make of what Howard said at halftime, Ben?
He said all the right things, obviously. I mean, he's a new signing. The Rapids are saying they're building something after a rough couple years. We all thought they were building something back in 2013, and then that kind of disintegrated over the past couple years, and now they're hoping with these bigger-name signings, Howard, Jermaine Jones, and Gashi, that they're going to build something back up to what that level was that they thought they had at that point.
Yeah, I mean, you have hopefully a leader in Tim Howard. And although he may not be the guy that puts in goals, you figure he's going to be able to organize. And he's certainly going to be somebody who reinvigorates that market. DC, get one. Fabi comes back and gets a goal in here. As I said, Zach McMath will want to do better. But split the points there on ESPN on Sunday, the early game, which we were kind of blessed with. We don't normally have these. A 2:30 p.m. kick between Philly and New England. I know we like New England. I know we like their attacking pieces, but I think we like CJ Sapong a whole lot more at this point. He's 27 years old, but good Lord, this guy might be the best number 9 in the league right now.
He has been through 3 games. I mean, the last 2 games, he was the best player on the field, and that was at Columbus and now home versus New England. And it's not just the goals, though. It was nice and kind of shocking to see him score a one-time goal with his left foot. That's not usually his game, but he does so much in terms of setting up other guys. He could have had 2 assists. He draws a ton of fouls. He drew a dodgy PK in this one, and he defends like a madman. I'm not going to say he's the next Chris Wondolowski. He's a different type of player, but he's making a similar leap at age 27, where Wando went from, I mean, Wando went from further down the pecking order to a guy who's a starter and an all-star and eventually a national teamer. Sapong has been a quality player in this league, but he's realizing all his potential right now, and he's scraping his own personal ceiling. And it's nice to see that from a guy who struggled with some demons and with consistency throughout his career.
This is a guy who was the rookie of the year his first year in the league when he was playing center forward for Sporting Kansas City. It's taken him a long time to really get back to that place and be trusted to have a starting spot there. Philly is giving it to him at the age of 27. We've talked about this the last couple of shows. U.S. attackers peaking at a later age, and now we're seeing that from him. I think he should have had a hat trick here. Two PKs, Elsinho misses one, Sebastian Letou misses one. That's tough for the Union. They still get it done. Javon Watson with a red card in this match. You'll see there's a theme here, red cards. We'll talk about that in the mailbag. The research bear here did some research for us, as he does.
As he's
wont to do. We have some numbers on that. That has upticked a little bit, but you have to stick around to see about that. But on the other side of the ball, should we be worried about Andrew Farrell, Ben? Because he's not been at his best.
After watching him the past couple weeks, I mean, the start of the season, he is not where we thought he would be when he came to the league a couple years ago. He
was great. Or where he showed last year, because he took steps forward.
Last year he started off slow. I mean, even not as bad as he started this season. And he kind of picked it up middle of the season. And by the end of the season, when the refs started falling off, he kind of fell off as well. And this year he looks completely out of place. He doesn't know where he should be. He's whiffing on the ball. He's stumbling in the box. It's just not looking good.
For Jim Curtin said, I mean, he didn't give specifics, but he's like, yeah, we knew we were going to attack down that side, and that's partly Javon Watson, but it's definitely partially Andrew Farrell as well. He's running himself into and out of plays that a central defender has to make in this league, and the Revs have some thinking to do over the next few days, and they have a game coming up this weekend. They don't have the international break, so it's tough for Jay Heaps and company right now.
Yeah, just three games this weekend. As Doyle said, a lot of teams off for the international break. Some other news from this one, Juan Agudelo not starting despite Charlie Davies being away. Davies and his wife Nina had twins. Straight up MLS baby boom in MLS. It is just crazy. There's something in the water. Lee Wynn also goes double post in this one, and there was a great tweet on it. Doyle, you want to walk us through that?
Yeah, it was the Saad Abdul Salam tweeted at Lee Wynn after the double post. He's like, I think it was, I've been there, brother. I know the feeling.
Yeah.
Of course, referencing last year in the PK shootout at Portland in the play-in round of the playoffs. Of course, he hit both posts. So it's something that you don't see often, but in MLS, apparently, it's becoming a staple of the league.
Got to play the angles. I mean, this was incredible. That would have been just another beautiful free kick for us to throw up on a highlight reel. My man, my guy, Jao Plata, had a nice little free kick this weekend. 2-2 draw against the Timbers. Two red cards in this one. Hint, hint, theme. There are a lot of red cards going down in MLS right now. Kyle Beckerman chucked. Same kind of deal as Roger Espinoza. A bad touch in the midfield, then a silly lunge on a play he really doesn't need to try to make in that position. Then Hamison Olave setting a record for red cards in an MLS career. He now has 10. He's got we'll give the stats in the in the mailbag. There's more behind Hamison Olave's red cards, but he threw an arm at Fernando Adi, gave up a PK, gave up the game tying PK. But Jao Plata, I mean, we're talking about CJ Sapong. There might not be a more exciting player in the league right now. I love that free kick, and I also love the fact that Javi Moe has the presence of mind to give that one up, because you figure Javi's taken all of those. He runs over the ball. All of a sudden, Quarce goes the wrong way and goal. But that's not all he does, Ben. I mean, this has been something to watch.
Well, just a quick stat on Javi Moe. We actually ran the numbers today. So he, since 2010, he's had six free kick goals, tied with David Beckham for the most in the league. On Jao Plata, I mean, the guy's electric. He was electric in 2014. I think he never really recovered after suffering that injury in the first day of preseason last year. Never really got his feet under him. And now he's had this whole preseason. He's had a couple good games in CCL. And now he's just bringing that into the season. And with all those pieces around him now, it just gives him more opportunities.
Yeah, I feel like
go ahead. You can see the identity of the team crystallizing around that front line of Joao Plata, Yuramov Sisian, and Barrito, because they're three guys who are super skillful, but they're very north-south. They all want to get out there and run at the opposing goal. Portland had trouble, obviously, slowing it down until it was until they were up two men. I mean, even 10 versus 11, RSL was always dangerous.
And this goes back to the issues with RSL. I mean, I love their whole team. I actually really like Sonny Obayang. I think he's done a really good job for them. He covers a ton of ground, lets Beckerman rest a little bit. Now, bad decision from Beckerman there in the midfield, gets him sent off and suspended. He'll be with the U.S. this weekend. Center back, still an issue, still an issue, still an issue. I mean, they have to make a signing before the window closes, Doyle. Am I wrong?
No, you're right, and the sooner the better. But at the same time, you don't want to make a panic signing. You don't want to get the wrong guy. So it's tough. I know they've swung and missed on a couple. For the next couple of weeks, you might have to continue to trust Justin Glad, who has given some good minutes in the past year for this team. Still very young, and still will get ragdolled a little bit because he hasn't filled out. But he has good instincts, and he has been able to avoid the type of mistakes that the other guys in the RSL lineup have not.
2-2-2 draws for RSL this season, both after leading 2-0. That's not a good stat. That's not what you want to see, but a nice start for them so far. LA Galaxy with a 3-1 win in the California Clasico. Another red card. Hint, hint, Simon Dawkins within this one. I thought this was it wasn't the most clear-cut red card, certainly from behind, and he kind of gets off his feet, but I didn't think it was as dangerous as some of the others we've seen this weekend. But Giassi Zardes, ahead of U.S. national team duty, he gets the double here, and then Chris Wondolowski continues to make me look like an idiot with a nice goal late on. And then PK from Robbie Keane, that's the way it goes. But the big news here, no Giovanni Dos Santos. Sebastian Legette is good in his place. Steven Gerrard goes down, in comes Bajo Husidic. Gerrard goes down in the third minute. This might be a blessing in disguise, Doyle.
A little bit. I thought they were better defensively once Bajo Husidic came on.
Tough three
better,
minutes, huh?
Yeah. Better compared to what they have been the past few weeks. And he definitely gives the ball away less. Gerrard's a tough player to play with, man. The only person, you know, we've watched this guy for, 15, 16 years? And the only person who's really figured out how to play alongside him is Xabi Alonso. And he's a genius. So it's tough, and I think the Galaxy can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief taking that win. I thought the other big thing was switching Zardes from the wing to up top in the second half. He makes them a lot better when he's in the 18 occupying defenders and not letting them run at Keane and the rest of the attackers. I think he's got to stay there for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. Also, Keane saying after this one that the offense isn't working. He needs more touches. He wants more opportunities around goal. We'll see what comes of all that. Mike McGee in the middle of things once again. That guy just knows how to create attacking plays for the Galaxy. Out in the Pacific Northwest here, Seattle at home, Vancouver coming in. We got a Cascadia match. We have another loss for the Sounders. They're calling it the Mark Geiger show. I can kind of agree. I don't think that the Bolaños penalty to start it off didn't look like there was much contact, if any contact there. But hey, these CONCACAF players, they know how to draw them. Speaking of CONCACAF players, Blas Perez, he is a crafty old coot, man. He set up that PK and he drew the next one, which is 100% a PK on Chad Marshall. I don't know how Chad Marshall can be arguing that call afterwards. He just absolutely bowls him over. Pedro Morales finishes them both. Andreas Ivanschitz with probably the best free kick of the weekend, and that's really
saying
something.
I still say Plata.
You think so?
Yeah, I just love Plata's bend on that one so much, but Ivanschitz was unsavable. So
yeah, left foot around the wall.
The view behind the goal was pretty insane.
And there's
I might have to say.
I'm going Ivanschitz, and just having the fire blast up right after he hit that adds to the epicness on that one. But they're still pointless.
Yeah.
What do they need? Sam Stachel is reporting today on MLSsoccer.com they could use that open DP slot before the window closes in early May. He's saying a number 10. Is that what they need, Doyle?
I think they need that. I think they also need a better number 9. No offense to Nelson Valdez, who's a pretty good player in this league, but he's not the type of guy who can lead a line that's going to compete for serious hardware. In the meantime, until that gets addressed, I think what you do is switch Ivanschitz and Dempsey. Dempsey's not a natural number 10, but he is a playmaker when he gets on the ball, and they need to get him more of the ball. And if you put Ivanschitz on the left side of the 4-3-3, A, that's where he wants to be anyway, and B, you drag the defenders out there with him because they have to shut down his crossing. So I think you stick with the 4-3-3. You just make a little bit of a personnel switch right there, and you try to roll that out. And in the meantime, you keep beating the bushes for the right signings.
What do the stats say, Ben, about slow starts? Have you looked into that at all? I mean, do we have any insight here?
Well, we had the stat last week that no team who's started 0-2 has won MLS Cup since 1996. That was 0-2. Now it's 0-3. I don't have any specific stats on that, but I know that once you get to 7 or 8, if you're still below a point a game through 8 games, it spells trouble. You're probably not going to make the playoffs. I think since about the past five years, only two teams out of 35 have made the playoffs after having only 7 points through 8 games.
So they need to turn it on now, is what we're saying. Look, it's probably not panic time. You're still taking it game by game. You still just got to collect points as they come. But this has not been a fun start for Sounders fans. We've got some email on us saying, hey, give me something to hope for. Give me some sort of good news. We'll try to look around and see if we can find some of that for you. Maybe the game of the weekend, and this is kind of where we'll end. New York Red Bulls 4, Houston Dynamo 3. I was at this one. It was a pretty glorious second half. The first half, got to tell you, was lacking in quality. Some bad defending in this one. The DeMarcus Beasley toe poke on the clearance right into Sasha Kljestan. I mean, man, I do that. Like, my plant foot hits the ball and somebody else scores. Tough one. Kamar Lawrence with a whiff, and then Will Bruin does what he does. And then Zubar gets megged on a cross. That one blew my mind, of course. Once again, Will Bruin right there to bang that thing in. And then Grella, who came on for Gonzalo Verón, gets kind of an ugly goal in the second. But then the goals from there on out were very, very nice. Two extremely good goals from Felipe. One to win it from, you guessed it, a free kick. Another one, a nice right footer from outside the box. And then Alex, midfielder for the Dynamo. That build-up and that goal was really, really nice. Doyle, they got the win. They're super happy about it. They needed that badly, especially in front of their home fans. But the Red Bulls have some serious, serious concerns at center back. Zubar out with a hammy, as well as Gideon Ba, who left with a hamstring injury. I thought he tore his knee the way he reacted to it, but we're hearing it's just a hamstring. Still, big worries.
Yeah, it's been, what, 3 in a row? Just from that one game. They're not going to stick with Kamar Lawrence in central defense, and they have to hope Carl Wimette comes back from Canadian national team games with full fitness and full health. Look, sometimes that's the way this league treats you. You have to throw in a rookie and just hope he can rise to the level, and it looks like that's what the story is going to be for the Red Bulls. It's probably going to be Zach Carroll, who's a big, strong, not super mobile defender from Michigan State, getting thrown to the Wolves in a couple of weeks. It's a big test. The guys in front of him, the midfield has to probably play a little bit deeper and a little bit sharper in terms of their positioning.
I'm just saying, Connor Wade played center back in college a little bit, so throw him in there, see what he's got. He may not have the height, but he's got some mobility there. On the other side, Will Bruin is going to keep Kubo out of the lineup for the foreseeable future. This guy, we've seen 3-game stretches from him, but he is really putting people under pressure, Ben.
Hashtag Will Bruin 200, right? Am I right?
Yeah.
I mean, I have a special affection for Will Bruin just because, the old dancing bear, Ben Bear. It works out well.
Yep. Obvious connections.
He's really stepping it up. I think the added pressure of having a guy like that behind him has forced him. He's putting in the extra work. He's really putting pressure on back lines like he usually ran the channels, but he wasn't really like botting up center backs. I think he's doing a little bit better job of that now. But I got to say, I was at the game too. I was in the upper deck with some rowdy Red Bulls fans. They were not happy in the first half. It was kind of a mess. Dax was misplaying passes. Nobody knew what was going on. But the second half was one of the most exciting 45 minutes of soccer you'll see. Good ways and in bad ways.
Good ways and bad ways. Hey, Boniek Garcia, when he's on, he can be one of the best players in this league. We're starting to see now and then that he's finding that form. Just not really consistent. The Dynamo, right now, maybe the must-watch team in MLS. Goals, goals, goals.
They're like the NYC of 2015.
Yeah,
there's
going to
be
pretty,
4, 5, or 6 goals every game.
It's pretty incredible. Speaking of goals or no goals, Chicago 0, Columbus 0. Look, we're going to skip over this one. We'll talk about these teams later on. Also, Kyle Larin getting the winner on Friday night against NYCFC. We will talk about the blue side of New York in the mailbag. Until then, we're going to go to break. When we come back, Andy Herzog of the US U23s, plus a look at the World Cup qualifiers.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hi, this is Tim Howard, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
I close my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. Pour one out. Pour one out for the poor UConn Huskies. Tough win, tough win for them. No, I didn't say that. What a tough win! I'm just, you know, I'm mixing my words up. KU Jayhawks, big time victory. I have to rub it in again. Kansas, dust in the wind, just like UConn's national title chances. Let's run into some U.S. national team U23 talk, Doyle. We'll have Andy Herzog, the head coach of that team, on in just a second. Two big games for them on Friday and Tuesday, matching up with the big team games in Barranquilla on Friday, 5 p.m. Eastern, FS1, and then in Dallas on Tuesday, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Aggregate series. This is for a spot in the Olympics. Away goals apply. This is a really, really big match to start this out, especially away from home. If you get a couple away goals, you're in a great position. If you give up some goals, you're going to have a really, really tough time. What are the stakes here, Doyle? Because we've been talking about that 2012 failure for an awful long time. I mean, it followed those players around. It followed Caleb Porter around.
It did, and it'll follow Andy Herzog around if they don't get into the Olympics, and it'll follow this group of this cohort of talent around if they don't get into the Olympics. This was supposed to be, we've all read this is the most talented generation. It seems like every 4 years we get those articles. But this group, there's a lot of good players here, and they haven't been able to put it all together. I think watching CONCACAF Champions League last month and the start of this month was sort of good preparation, because it reminds you of how fast and furious teams can come out in these two-leg events and just how precious away goals are. If I'm the U.S. On Friday, I come out with the intent of winning the first 20, 25 minutes. Try to put Colombia on their heels, punch them in the mouth, and try to define the series by your terms rather than letting them sort of take the conch and make it theirs.
A very talented Colombia team, obviously looking to book their spot in the Olympics. 11 MLS players on this roster for Andy Herzog. 14 with MLS experience, of course, the likes of Matt Miazga, Luis Gil, Shane O'Neill. They're no longer in MLS, but they got their start. 11 from that January camp. Some guys who are not here, Cameron Carter-Vickers is not. Gideon Zalalem is not. No Christian Pulisic, although he is a very young guy. He's not really in this age group, and I'm not shocked that he wouldn't be brought in. You look at this roster, Matt. What stands out to you? Any players, anybody in particular who is going to make the difference for this team?
Well, first, there was a cryptic tweet from Dortmund this afternoon saying that Pulisic is actually with the U.S. team. We haven't seen any sort of confirmation from U.S. soccer, and we don't know whether he's with the team officially or just sort of traveling with them to get a taste. But with or without him, what is striking is the lack of true goal scorers and the lack of true creators in the midfield. Luis Gil has had that role mostly for this cycle, and Gil has generally played better for country than for club, but he's not really that guy. He's not Javier Morales. He's not Landon Donovan. He's a guy who has 2 assists in 10 games for Querétaro so far. And the problems are even, I think, a little bit greater up top. Jerome Kiesewetter has 1 goal in about 15 games in the third Bundesliga, and Julian Green is tearing it up, but in the fourth or fifth flight of German soccer. Jordan Morris has struggled. Kyrie Shelton has 1 career MLS goal. This team lacks that, and if that doesn't worry you, then you're probably watching the wrong game.
Go check out the roster at MLSsoccer.com. All the news will be there as well. We have Andy Herzog on the phone. He's Jurgen Klinsmann's assistant coach for the U.S. national team. He's the head coach of the U-23s. He's got his roster together. Andy, how do you feel about this group? Everything good on your end?
Yeah, I'm happy. I mean, I've got most of our players. I have a good group together. Of course, two or three players are injured. They were not able to come, but overall, I'm really happy to have to have this group together. And I have to say thanks to all the clubs, MLS clubs and the other clubs in Europe, wherever the players are coming from. So we have a good group. We hope we have a real battle and a good game in Colombia to have a good second game in Dallas. And after the game in Dallas, we can celebrate.
So if people don't know, the U-23 call-ups can sometimes be a little bit of a headache with clubs either not releasing players or a little bit of negotiations going on. You mentioned a couple that you're missing. Who are the guys maybe that you're missing? Who's injured? Because I don't see, for instance, a Gideon Zilalem here or a Carter Vickers.
Yeah, Cameron Carter Vickers is injured. Zach Steffen has a little injury. And then Rubio Rubin from Utrecht is injured. So it's, but I don't think now about the players injured. For me, it's more important the players I have here. We have to train real good now to get the group together and ready for Colombia. Colombia is a good team, but I think we have chances to go to Rio.
We will get to Colombia. Just one second, sir. I have one last question on guys that are missing, and that would be DeAndre Yedlin and John Brooks. Both of them,
yeah,
with the national team. Can you just kind of walk us through the decision to leave them with the senior side as opposed to move them down with the U-23s?
No, as you know, I have a really good relationship and with Jurgen, with Jurgen Klinsmann, and we are always in touch and we talk every day, nearly every day. And for him, for me, it was clear that the first team is very important at the two crucial games against Guatemala. I have a good team together. I have a lot of defenders, and we still have the opportunity. If the men's national team has a good result in Guatemala, maybe we can get these two players for our second game. But I have to be focused now on the players here in Miami. We will head to Barranquilla on Wednesday, and we have to do a good job preparing for Colombia. They're a good team. But if we have two good games, we will beat them.
Of course. Looking to book a spot in the Olympics in Rio de Janeiro. Talk to me about the stakes here, Andy, because I know what most people remember from the Olympics are not 2008 or not the instances before. Most people right now would remember 2012 and that failure to qualify. How do you explain the stakes to your team? How do you understand the stakes? How does it feel going into these matches?
No, it's, I work with young players, so there's already a lot of pressure, and I have to make the player aware that they have to be focused on their game, on their performance, and especially in Colombia, they say there's already a sellout stadium, so there will be a lot of people cheering against us, so we have to have a cool head, and we have to play with our qualities to have a good result for the second game. But I don't want to put additional pressure on the players. Of course, everyone knows how big and how great it is for every U.S. sports athlete to participate for the Olympics. So that should be the biggest goal of us. So I don't have to put additional pressure or motivation on the players. So I expect everyone to fight 100%, but at the end it's a soccer game and it's not enough just to fight. We have to be really smart in every little detail, and I guess, like I said, Colombia has a couple of very good players, and defensively we have to do a good job defending them. But with our quick players up front, I always expect to score, and that's what we have to do.
So you have the first leg away from home, and that, of course, presents a challenge. You don't want to go back to Dallas with a big deficit or even with a deficit of any kind. Really, can you walk me through what you're thinking as far as the tactics? You mentioned, look, the focus, making sure that you don't make these little mental mistakes that can result in goals. Is this a case of maybe a counterattacking situation? How do you approach the first leg?
No, I'm not a coach who always wants to defend and just to play on counterattacks. Of course, we have very fast strikers up front, that's our quality, but I don't want to sit back and see what Colombia is doing, so we have to be proactive too. We have two games ahead of us. Of course, the first, we won't be stupid and attack like crazy and open our defense for Colombia to make it easy for them. So we have to be smart, but we have to create chances to hurt them too, and that they see that we have a good team. We already made one big mistake against Honduras at the most important time in the qualification in the semifinal. We were not ready to have a big fight against them because they played really hard and tough. I expect the same from Colombia. So every single player has to be ready and he has to go into every battle with 100%. And I don't want to see any player dropping back or something. Then we have no chance.
Is there any player in particular that you think is important here? Have you decided on a captain? Is there someone you're kind of building around in a sense?
No, like I said, it's maybe the first time in the Olympic qualification in October was nearly the same. But right now I have even more a better roster together. So I don't know yet the starting lineup, honestly. So we have three or four open spots and we will see in the training session who will start in Colombia. Maybe we have two different approaches in the away game in Colombia and then at the home game. So we have to see in the next training days how the players are, in which shape they are, and then we would go to Colombia and have a good game.
How did you scout Colombia? How did you go about preparing for this match, and what should your players be aware of? What should fans be aware of when they watch this game?
Now they have a tournament in November in China. We saw all the games. Then they have two games here in Miami, and at the end of February, we were not able to see the first game because it was behind closed doors. But the second game we were watching, and we saw a lot. But they brought in some new players, some very good players from Deportivo Cali and Atlético Nacional. They all play in the Copa Libertadores. That sees that they, even already the young players have a lot of quality. But like I said, we have to have a good game, especially defensively. We have to be really tough. And then with our quality playing up forward, we can beat them.
So, Andy, kind of a big picture question here before I let you go. And we hear a lot from Jurgen and from commentators and people both around soccer in the U.S. and elsewhere that tournaments like these, the Olympics, opportunities on these big stages are so important for developing first-team players and preparing players for the first team down the line, the ones that are able to make that jump. Why is a tournament like the Olympics so important for the U.S. to qualify? And more importantly, why is it important for your players to be in that situation?
Yeah, listen, for every young player, it's important to get playing time in their club teams. And then to play and participate on the highest level in your age group, that would be in our age group, the Olympics, that's huge. Because when you're able to play against Argentina or maybe against Brazil or the best European teams, best African teams, you compete on the highest level possible, and that's a great experience for every single player to know how where he has opportunities to improve and what we have to do better in the future. So that's always huge. Either it's a World Cup or Olympic Games, to compete at the highest level is the most important thing.
Of course, you, Andy, are going for something here as well. You'd like to coach this team at the Olympics. We talked about the pressure maybe on the team, on the players. Before I let you go, do you feel pressure? How much pressure do you feel to deliver this spot for both the U.S. and also for Jurgen, who's given you this duty?
No, of course there's pressure. When you're head coach of a team, there's always pressure, but you have to deal with pressure. Otherwise, you have to say, no, I'm not ready for this job. No, I mean, we had a good qualification, but we had one real bad game against Honduras, and that's what we have to avoid against Colombia. If we do well, but we have two easy mistakes or two individual mistakes and we lose and we're out, and of course the head coach made the mistakes, and that's it. That's how it is. But as a head coach, like I said, you're responsible for your team, for your decisions, and that's part of the job, but it makes the job fun too, because otherwise if there's no pressure, that's boring after a while.
Some decisions to be made, certainly some fun to be had on Friday in Barranquilla, 5 p.m. Eastern on FS1, the U.S. Youth 23s going up against Colombia. They'll come back to Dallas on Tuesday for the second leg. Andy, good luck, man.
Thank you very much.
Break a leg. All right, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
We heard it there. There's a possibility that DeAndre Yedlin and John Brooks could join up for this with this team in Dallas. We'll see how that first leg goes. Remember that one, 5 p.m. Eastern, Fox Sports 1 from Barranquilla, Colombia on Friday. The follow-up on Tuesday in Dallas, 9:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN2. Of course, at the same time, the big guys are in action. The U.S. national team against Guatemala in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. They'll play in Guatemala on Friday at 10 p.m. on BN Sports, Estadio Mateo Flores, and they'll come back to Columbus on Tuesday, 7 p.m. Eastern, ESPN2, Unimas, and UDN. The group is out. The lineup is out. A lot of guys here, more than the 23 allowed on the roster, I believe, Matt. So some of these guys just there to gain experience, to get a look before these Copa America rosters come out. Clint Dempsey is back. That's big. But I have some real questions about this roster, and it kind of starts at fullback for me. When you look at the defensive grouping, it's an awful lot of central defenders. You have the same thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you just mentioned that Yedlin might end up with the U23s. If that's the case, then there isn't really a natural right back on this roster. I mean, we've all seen Jeff Cameron play there a little bit.
Maybe Steve Birnbaum, he's kind of moved outside for them now and then. I mean,
that is just not the same type of thing, is it?
No, it's not. Michael Orozco is in this group, so maybe he could. It is a little bit puzzling.
Yeah, and Orozco's been sort of a safety blanket for Jurgen Klinsmann. Anytime he has any doubts, he sort of tosses him out there at right back. We've already seen it in this qualifying cycle. That is my guess. I mean, Michael Orozco starting meaningful qualifiers is a kind of a head-scratcher. And you get a little bit of the same thing on the other side with Edgar Castillo, who has proved to be very mistake-prone in U.S. colors. That said, Castillo at least is playing really, really well for Liga MX, for Monterrey in Liga MX. So I understand that one a little bit better, but it's thin. You know, there are guys being ignored who maybe shouldn't be.
Any of those stick out before you move on? I mean, anybody off the top of your head?
Well, I mean, I'd like to see Jorge Villafana there. I mean, DeMarcus Beasley could certainly be called in this past weekend's whiff.
It wasn't a whiff. He got contact. He just hit it with the wrong foot. No biggie.
So, all right, so we'll call it a weeby.
Yeah, there we go. Oh, boy. Oh, there's a lot of things now called a weeby in this office. Getting megged regularly, also called a weeby. I have problems with footwork sometimes in tight spaces. You know who doesn't have problems with that? A bunch of these midfielders, though. We've talked a lot about where's the creativity. Jurgen, call Lee Wynn, call Darlington Nagbe. These guys are finally in, and now he has a real selection conundrum. I look at the front line, I look at the midfielders, and I wonder about what formation they'll play. There's a lot of tough decisions to be made because there's a lot of guys who've made cases for themselves and not a lot of spots to go around.
I agree with that. At the same time, I think it actually gets a little bit easier if you decide that Michael Bradley is going to play deep and shield the back line as he's done for Toronto FC at the start of this season.
You think that's the case, though? That's the key,
right?
I mean,
it's Jurgen, so it's tough to predict, right? But I would definitely put Bradley there and build from that. And if you put two smart players like Bedoya and Nagbe around him, you have suddenly a functional and skillful midfield that can, you know, do the shielding work, but also create some danger going forward.
And who do you play on the wings? You got Bobby Wood out there. Jesse Zardes, I think, is an obvious one for them. Clint Dempsey's going to play in this one. Josie Altidore, we're not sure about minutes. I mean, I'm just trying to build this kind of midfield forward line in my head, and I'm with you. I want to see Bradley in that position, playing that way, really being the anchor, reinforcing the role that he's playing with Toronto FC. Like, don't let him get into the habit of chasing the ball. Just, this is your job. Do it. Club and country. Just do that and do it well. And as Alexi said on the broadcast last night, I think he can be world class at that position, but then I wonder how you build around on those wings, and that's notoriously been an issue.
Yeah, well, especially with Fabian Johnson hurt. Unfortunately, he just picked up an injury this past weekend. He would have been the easy answer, right?
Yeah, he would have been the best player on the roster, I think.
Yeah, I think you could definitely make that argument. Maybe Ethan Finlay gets a look. Finlay's not going to help you a ton in possession, but the U.S. team under Jurgen Klinsmann doesn't give a damn about possession. We have regressed aesthetically in the last 5 years, and that's fine if the results come with it. So maybe you decide you want to play direct and you need somebody to stretch the field and who can put in the final pass, and that's what Finlay does. So maybe he gets a look. You mentioned Zardes. You mentioned Wood. Maybe Clint Dempsey. He has played that a little bit for Seattle this year. And, of course, in the past, he was more of a wide player than a second forward as well. There are some answers, but as always, it's a case of fitting all the talent together.
We will talk more about this on Thursday, of course. I'm going to give you a one-word answer to right here. You have to give me just a name, goalkeeper, who starts. Just the audible sigh. Okay, sigh. Sigh goes in goal. I mean, it's got it. It's, I mean, yeah. I don't know. I have no idea at this point. We will see come Friday. We'll talk more about this on Thursday. Before we get out of here, the Canadian national team has a huge two ties against Mexico as well. These could really make or break their hopes to be in the hex. If you get a point, maybe even three, that'd be massive for them. They and Mexico are at the top of that group with El Salvador and Honduras right now. What are you looking out for them? Their first game Friday, BC plays 10 p.m. Eastern, UDN, TSN, RDS.
Well, we know that they're not going to have a ton of the ball against Mexico, even at home. So I do wonder what we're going to see in terms of trying to dampen Mexico's creativity through midfield. In the past, Benito Floro has really liked to use Adam Strath as a D-mid, and I think Strath is terrible there. I prefer him as a center back. I would like to see something a little more creative from this Canadian team. Now, it doesn't have to be pure possession. It can, you know, you could have 40% of the ball and still be really creative when you have it. But that hasn't been the case. It's been really, really direct under Floro. I do think they miss Jonathan Osorio, who inexplicably is not called up for this one. And it ends up putting so much of the offensive burden on the shoulders of Kyle Larin.
Kyle Larin, of course, with that one goal. We'll see what he can do against Mexico. Maybe even see Kyle Larin versus Rafa Benitez. That's a delicious one for all of us CONCACAF fans at home. Always full coverage, MLSsoccer.com. When we come back into the mailbag, there's an interesting theory about Rapids, man. Hashtag, we are all Rapids, man.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at MLSsoccer.com. Or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Hey, this is DeAndre Yedlin from the Seattle Sounders, and you're listening to Extra Time Radio.
They say free when you're single doubt.
Back on Extra Time Radio. Matt Doyle, Andrew Wiebe, Metal Mondays, Chevelle, the Red. All because of red cards in MLS. We've got a lot this year. Let's get right into it. Bobby from Hermosa Beach wants to know if we're seeing more reds. He says he's not complaining about the one in the San Jose LA game as a Galaxy fan, but it ruins the game just a little bit. And we've also got Michael Gleason in Salt Lake City, who's seen a ton of red cards this year. And he's saying, hey, what's going on here? Why is this happening? We've got some answers. Ben, the researcher bear, took off, but he still gave us a little bit of information to work with here. Hamison Olave, I kind of teased this one. He's now the record holder in MLS with 10 MLS red cards and 4 in the last 20 league matches. That's crazy, Matt, and that can't happen. That is that's every 5 games you've got a red card. You're really, really handcuffing your team in that sense. If you're looking at March, if you're looking at the first 3 weeks of the season, there have been 10 so far, 10 in 30 games played. Through 3 weeks last year, there were 9. Through 3 weeks the year before that, 2014, 5. Through 3 weeks in 2013, and this is like an outlier and just crazy, 0. So it has gone up, and if you're looking at against season averages, the entirety of the season, right now we're at 0.33 red cards per game. So 1 in 3 games, that's the highest total if you're looking at season totals. 2011 was 0.28, 2015, 0.26, 2014, 0.25, and down and down and down from there. In 2012, just 0.18 a game. So that's pretty incredible. What do you chalk this up to, Matt? Any theories here?
Well, I think it seems pretty obvious that the professional referees organization, has decided to crack down upon overly physical play. And some of these red cards have not been, in my opinion, good calls, but I'm okay with that. I'd rather... Look, MLS as a league has been too physical for too long, and I'm not going to complain too strenuously about trying to crack down on the types of tackles that we saw from like Roger Espinoza on Sunday night or O'Neill Fisher a week ago, you know, or Javon Watson Sunday afternoon. These are all, you know, shin high, studs up, really endangering the safety of the opponent types of tackles. And if it's borderline in the past, I think that where that line is has moved a little bit, and teams need to understand that and adjust, because, I mean, we've seen it over the years. And we DC United said it last year. Our plan was to kick Jovinko out of the game. And we've seen Mauro Diaz deal with it, and Javi Morales deal with it, and the skill players in this league get hacked down more than they should, and this is a way of protecting them.
Yep, I agree with you there. They're sending a message right now. This will not be tolerated. Look, I think we all want to see as much skill as possible in the league, and that's not to say we don't want to see defense, we don't want to see bite. But, look, you got to choose your moments. You got to do it in a way that's not going to injure your opponent. Some other news here. We have an email from Rex Dettinger. We're not going to get to it, Rex, but we'll talk about it on Thursday. He's wondering if NYCFC are being it's costing them points playing at Yankee Stadium because they're not really able to take on a home field advantage there. Any thoughts for anybody? Send them to us. We'll talk about that. Also, the mascot Final 8 is coming out on Thursday. My guy, Rapids Man, he made it. Or I guess Rapid Man? I'm not sure exactly which one that is.
Rapid Man looks like he juices, by the way. So I think we need to drug test him after the tournament.
Matt in Denver has a theory on Rapid Man, and we'll read this on Thursday when that comes out. But basically, he's saying that Rapid Man went on vacation after he was officially retired in 2007, and basically went on a cross-country international global tour of different rapids, and that's how he came back, and he's now,
kind of a vision quest.
Yeah, I wish I had time to read this because it's an incredible thing. We'll hit it on Thursday. Also, Matt in Denver, we are going to send you an MLS Live subscription so you can keep up the league. I think that's the least that we can do. As it stands, though, we are out of time. Big thanks to Andy Herzog. Big thanks to Ben, the research bear. Thanks to you, Matt Doyle. I am Andrew Reby. We will see you in a couple days.